to SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot right now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Good morning and welcome to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. And before we get started, I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal people who are the traditional custodians of this land from where we are broadcasting today. I would also like to pay my respect to elders past, present and emerging of the Eora Nation and recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded. So I will be with you until midday this morning. We are talking about all things arts and culture, as we do every Saturday morning. We have a very interesting and full show for you today, a couple of Sydney Festival things on the agenda, as well as some other things. So you can expect to hear from Tolly Havini about her show at Artspace, which is part of Sydney Festival, entitled Reclamation, which I'm very excited to talk about a bit later on. It's a really interesting show with a lot of interesting materials and concepts behind it all. We'll also be talking about Hi-Vis at Casula Powerhouse Art Centre, which is a show that's all about fabulousness and using that as a defence mechanism. So kind of using entertainment as a way to get a little bit under the skin and talk about or defend yourself against some of the more pressing issues that present us in life. And first up, we have an interview with Dr. Fiona Foley, a butcherlar woman, curator, and one of Australia's most influential contemporary art thinkers. Our producer, Amelia, went to an in-depth conversation held at the National Art School in Paddington, and together they talked about Fiona's artistic practice over the past 30 years. So stick around. It's a really exciting chat coming up just around the corner. And to get us there, I'm going to play a track from Rebecca Hatch. There's a language warning on this one. This is Brown Girl Chronicles. You're tuned into So Hot right now.
Heard a little story about a young girl. She was 18, brown skin with the curls. Made it from the area. Fuck all the stereotypes. And if you wanted, I might tell them to pass in the mic.
I don't.
If you approve, can I rest my doubt? If I can make it on the scene, does that mean class is out? Cause looking out from the minority, I see. We see the gaps in the authority. A key issue in the system that's been written, no permission. You can mask it with my purity and my face. My insecurities creeping up out of space. Sometimes I'm still tripping on my own shoelace. But I stand up anyways and I pay for my race. Cause
ooh, go and take a leap when the grass is high and the water.
Taking naps and having dreams. I think my mama, cause where would I have been? And I just wanna influence my generation's teens from the area streets. Where went way into the scene? I don't want you to think that I'm anything more. We grew up together, I'll be there when you call. And I hate to see my peers go for scraps on the floor. Brother, we can build together, you can knock on my door. Heard a little story about a young girl. She was 18, brown skin with the curls. Made it from the area, fuck all the stereotypes. And if you wanted, I'd bite. Tell them to pass on the mic.
Ooh, go and take a leap when the grass is high and the water is deep. Can't yet make a feat if the world against us is high.
Gonna take a leap when the grass is high and the water's deep. Cause we don't rely on rain.
Thank you.
Music is the medicine. These beats got us out of control. Dance around like you never get old. Breaking and popping on my boys pop locking. Got us feeling like we out of this world. Drink your mask, get the young one, battle like a goring alico. Go more in a tumor in a. Go for me, use the monthly beat. Go your mark, limit in the price. Go hard, never lay back. No problem, you got neck brace, no problem. You got two left feet, can't catch that beat. Take a deep breath, cause I got this, yo. No problem, you got two left feet, can't catch that beat, take a deep breath, cause I got this, yo.
Baby, free your mind. If you're driven for the vision, then I'm down to ride. Where the beat drop, there me you'll find. And we still in the city, but the crowd going wild. Yeah, keep it banging through the system. Light it up, start it up like an engine. Bars on lock, put the music freedom. And the booty drum, go put up a bum bum. Hey, okay, yeah, come. I give you some of this, make it jump. Do it just to do it, and I do it till it's done. Connect with the sound, people over income. That's team, that's squad, get the picture. That's us, that's mob, if you with us. Just be, yeah, the queen is in the building. Knocking at the kingdom, yeah.
Okay, is it with us? Yeah, okay, is it with us?
Jazz B, yeah, the queen is in the building. You better come correct if you're knocking at the kingdom.
Celebrate Sydney Lunar Festival at more than 100 exciting events over 16 days. From Haymarket's Lunar Lane Street Party on Lunar New Year's Day to a fabulous Lunar New Year Fair. Discover 12 Zodiac Lunar Lanterns, gigantic golden rat robots, an electrifying LED line and dragon dancers. There are talks, tours and workshops, shopping and markets, exhibitions, cultural performances and lunar feasts. Saturday, January 25th to Sunday, February 9th. SydneyLunarFestival.com. City of Sydney sponsors 2SER.
Hello and welcome back to So Hot Right Now with myself, Nicole Beck. You are tuned in for your weekly dose of arts and culture. And up the top there, you heard from Rebecca Hatch with Brown Girl Chronicles. And then just that was Baker Boy featuring Jess B with Medigen. And Who Are These Strangers and Where Are They From is the title of a soundscape based on the oldest known Aboriginal song documenting the first sighting of Captain Cook back in 1770. It's also the title of Dr. Fiona Foley's latest work and show, currently exhibiting at the National Art School in Paddington. As part of Sydney Festival, on the opening week of the show, an in-depth conversation event was held with creator Dionne Mundine, discussing a 30-year survey of her photographic works. After the event, our producer Amelia spoke to Fiona about her artistic practice. Here's what she had to say.
In the eastern suburbs, the National Art School in Paddington has been home to some of Australia's greatest contemporary art thinkers. Among some of Australia's most acclaimed and challenging artists has to be Fiona Foley.
When I was 24, I started to collect a lot of books and I wanted to understand for myself about race relations in Australia. So one of the first books I bought was a book called The Destruction of Aboriginal Society by C.D. Rowley. And that led to other books, but mostly I was reading about the frontier massacres and the frontier war that had taken place here in Australia, because none of it was being taught in university settings. I self-educated myself about this history, and because it wasn't being taught in schools or university settings.
A Butchala woman whose work has been dedicated to exploring race relations, her work is being exhibited at Sydney Festival in a 30-year survey at the Old Jail.
I guess just to start off with, you yourself were a former student here, so how does it feel to be back?
Oh, it brings back a lot of fond memories, and I had the opportunity of meeting my old sculpture teacher here at the opening, Bruce McElmott. So lots of good memories from here, and just wonderful to have this opportunity to show seven bodies of work. The focus is on my photographic career, so it's been amazing and just really good to work with this institution again.
We're quite blessed these days that we can easily just look something up online. Could you talk a little bit about your research process in those earlier years?
Well, you're right. There was no Google internet search in that era. So mostly it was just reading books at home and piecing one book together with another book and understanding that history of that particular publication or the historian who was writing in that specific area. So, you know, Henry Reynolds was one of those people who was nationally recognised then, and so he was another person I read widely. There were other people that came at a later date, and when you started to engage with these publications, you realised that this was replicated from one state to the other. So Queensland was very similar to Western Australia in the way that they treated Aboriginal people during the frontier wars and how they would dispose of bodies after a massacre. So you would see this overlap in history. And for me, it was really good to have that background knowledge, because it meant that because I was clued up factually, it's very hard for non-Indigenous people to argue with me. And it has been said to me that Australia was settled peacefully, so I just know that that's not the case. So now I can easily refute that and stand on very firm ground in the knowledge that I've built up over the years.
Throughout the exhibition are some of Fiona's earlier works. A lot of it looked at the untold histories of race relations, particularly around the use of opium on Fraser Island. Upstairs, where the talk I attended was held, are some of her more recent works. One series you can't help but miss are 12 striking panels of highly stylized photographs of Black American men wearing dark leather Ku Klux Klan costumes. Here's Fiona explaining a bit about them.
Well, I created a body of work that was looking at race hatred, race politics, I call it. And I constructed a group called the Hedonistic Honky Haters. So it was playing with all of the symbolism that we're familiar with from the films that have come out of the United States in relation to the Ku Klux Klan. It was inverting all of those symbols, from the colour of white costumes and hoods to Dutch wax, black hoods and African cloth that could be bought in Harlem, from, you know, the KKK to the HHH. So I called my group the Hedonistic Honky Haters, and I used African American models to pose under the costumes for me. And really it was dissecting how this race hate group in Australia is constructed, and then using those symbols and inverting them and creating another group.
And in America, when that was first exhibited, could you talk about the reception and how it's since been received here in Australia?
Well, the work was shown in a district called the Meatworks at a international curatorial space. And well, really it was the people who participated in the project, so it wasn't really a clear feedback from a wider audience. It was a very select group. So when the work came back to Australia and was shown in Sydney and Brisbane and Melbourne, there were different responses to the work. So my friends of colour or Aboriginal people saw the humour in the work, and white Australians were really confronted by the work because they couldn't place it how were they supposed to read this work? So they were really relying on their emotions. And that's really how I wanted the work to be perceived, on an emotional level, and that raw response. And it really goes back to the viewer, what baggage they're bringing to the work and how they've interpreted the work. And you could see that coming out, especially with white Australian audiences.
I find it really interesting that there can be such a strong contrast in one particular work. I'm curious to ask if there have been any other works in the past that have elicited similar sort of criticisms or feedback, some response that has been interesting for you.
There's been many works. The sculptural work Dispersed, that's on permanent display at the moment at the National Gallery of Australia, that talks about massacres, and the D has a number of 303 bullets on it. The public artwork out front of the Brisbane Magistrates Court that has 94 massacre sites etched on the public record that are etched into the pavement. So I do work to provoke people to think and to have a emotional response. Art is a form of communication. So that's how I think about using it. And it's a platform for me to say potent things. And I think as I get older, I have explored that space a lot more and don't shy away from putting these truths in the public arena.
I think that's where the best art generally does come from. Thank you so much for your words and time, Fiona.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you.
That is Dr. Fiona Foley ending that story there. Who are these strangers and where are they is running as part of Sydney Festival until February 8th at the National Art School over in Paddington. I highly recommend that you check that out. Entry is free, so head to that gallery over on Forbes Street, just off Oxford Street. And stay with us, because up next we are talking about ArtSpace Sydney's current exhibition entitled Reclamation. I'm going to play a track to get us there. This is Red Fern Address in Memory of Vision from Paul Mack. You are tuned into So Hot Right Now.
Ladies and gentlemen, well, I'm very pleased to be here today at the launch of Australia's celebration of the 1993 International Year of the World's Indigenous People. We non-Aboriginal Australians should perhaps remind ourselves that Australia once reached out for us. Didn't Australia provide opportunity and care for the dispossessed Irish? Did it not for the poor of Britain, the refugees from war and famine and persecution in the countries of Europe and Asia? If it isn't reasonable to say that if we can build a prosperous and remarkable, harmonious, multicultural society in Australia, surely we can find just solutions to the problems which beset the first Australians, the people to whom the most injustice has been done. And as I say, the starting point might be to recognise that the problem starts with us, the non-Aboriginal Australians. It begins, I think, with an act of recognition. Recognition that it was we who did the dispossessing. We took the traditional lands and smashed the traditional way of life. We brought the diseases and the alcohol. We committed the murders. We took the children from their mothers. We practiced discrimination and exclusion. It was our ignorance and our prejudice and our failure to imagine that these things could be done to us. With some noble exceptions, we failed to make the most basic human response and enter into their hearts and minds. We failed to ask, how would I feel if this was done to me? As a consequence, we failed to see that what we were doing degraded us all. But there's one thing today we cannot imagine. We cannot imagine that the descendants of people whose genius and resilience maintained a culture here through 50,000 years or more, through cataclysmic changes to the climate and the environment, and who then survived two centuries of dispossession and abuse, will be denied their place in the modern Australian nation. We can't imagine that. We cannot imagine that we'll fail. And with the spirit that is here today, I'm confident that we won't fail. I'm confident we will succeed in this decade. Thank you very much for listening to me.
There is a track from Paul Mack entitled Red Fern Address in Memory. You're tuned into So Hot Right Now with myself, Nicole Beck, and it is almost 11:30, which means we are nearly halfway through our show. But right now we are talking about Artspace Sydney, which is the site for Sydney-based artist Taloi Havini's first solo exhibition entitled Reclamation. Exploring notions of ownership, colonization, and the politics of Oceania, Taloi's practice personally responds to the history and culture of the autonomous region of Bougainville using photography, video, and installation. I'm joined now by Taloi in studio to tell me a little bit more about the exhibition. Good morning.
Morning.
Sorry, it's quite an intro. So your artistic practice has a strong focus on history and identity in a place where you grew up, which is Bougainville. Can you tell us a bit more about that place and kind of the history of the area, provide a bit of context?
Sure. So Bougainville is part of the Solomon Islands. It's the largest, biggest island of that Solomon Island archipelago. And, it sits between, right in Melanesia. Well, people call it Melanesia, being like the darker skinned people of the Pacific. And however, Bougainville was sort of taken over by Papua New Guinea, which Papua New Guinea was a territory of Australia. So it's this strange colonial history that Australia has with Bougainville. And it's even like unresolved today in a way. Yeah. So it's a big part of, and I'm also Australian. My mother's Australian. My father's Bougainville. So I'm very much born in Bougainville, live in Australia, live between both places.
And Bougainville is also kind of known, or like in terms of the cultural links to the Solomon Islands, where that's where the Discovery Copper was in the 1960s. And that also created the development of a Panguna mine, which had kind of significant environmental damage for Bougainville. How is that kind of pollution? Like, I know that you explore that in your work. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. So I was born in the 80s in Bougainville, and it was like a strange time because my father's generation, there was no mine. And so essentially I grew up in a mining town in Arawa, and that mining town and the mine is built by Australian mining company, Rio Tinto. So, you know, I grew up with lots of Australian kids, their parents were working in the mines, and many ways Australia understands, like in Western Australia, you have, or like all over Indigenous-owned land, lots of mining here. So you have lots of fly-in, fly-out workers. In essence, that's what Australia did to Bougainville, and that's what I grew up in. And I also grew up knowing that there were, like, lots of tension, and right when Bougainvillians decided that they didn't want the mine and found out how, like, we were being pushed to the fringes while all these Australians had mansions and big wages. So I grew up also in that mining town, but also with the tension and the start of a war. And the pollution was a huge aspect of it, just like when the people saw what the mining company was doing, dredging whole valleys and dumping tailings into the ocean, into the rivers. Yeah, so there's no fresh water. People lived off the land, so this impacted them. So slowly, since the 60s, when they went in and decided it was Australian or Crown land, then the company came in, made millions. Lots of Australians, New Zealanders were, like families were profiting off that, whereas a lot of Bougainvillians got menial jobs, you know, like factory type kind of jobs. So it all sort of happened within 20 years, this destruction of a whole land and a sort of society. So that's the Panguna mine, you know, the catalyst for the next, I guess, 10 years of hardcore war that eventuated, and all the miners had to be evacuated, and that's when Papua New Guinea sent in their defence, yeah, the army. So my work, yeah, Habitat, in 10 minutes, 33 seconds.
Encapsulates everything.
Encapsulates, like, a lot of these sentiments, and uses archives and films from propaganda, mining propaganda, and news reportage. And then I also film current footage of the land and the people. And it's in art space right now in a huge installation that's very immersive.
What was the process like going through different kind of archival materials to create this work?
Yeah, okay. So I've been documenting the whole land since 2015. Yeah, so like just through friends wanting to see what the damage myself. So you start in the town that I was born and you go up and over in the ridge, and it might take, you know, 3 hours to survey the whole land in a full drive. And so anything from like floating down rivers with a GoPro, seeing how what once was virgin forest is now like a massive dam and 7 rivers were dammed to make one huge swamp. And now we've got crocodiles coming in from the ocean. Tilapia, the fish that is the same species that killing the Murray Darling here. These Australians thought that it'd be good to introduce that species to our place. So then that's gone wild. So this habitat for me is about exploring and documenting all of this. So I started that in 2015 from the tailings. And tailings essentially mean both wet damage, like damming whole virgin forests into uninhabitable swamp sort of lands, to dry moonscape silt. Yeah, so you remove the topsoil of any beautiful virgin forest and you dig deep. That's what the mining company did to get the copper and the gold minerals, and then they crushed it, and that's what they got millions of profits of money from. But to do that, they needed to basically create this desert moonscape that goes for kilometres and kilometres, and nothing can grow on that land. So I've been filming that with all sorts of types of, like, you know, even like aerial, like with drone footage. Like, I don't really like drones, but when I went there, the landowners, I explained to them, you know, it'd be good to get an aerial perspective. And to do that, it's this thing with a camera on a helicopter, and they're becoming more available. And so they told me, you know, they were like, well, don't come back without one. So I was like,
okay.
Right. I had to go and like buy one and teach myself how to use it, go there and realize, yeah, actually this tool can be used to help landowners survey the damage. And currently that's, I'm helping landowners with giving all the footage over, and they're using that to document the damage and ask for a lot of compensation.
And this work involves a collaboration with community beyond what you've just mentioned, in terms of some of the work was created collaboratively with Haku clan members. Can you tell us a bit about the process of working with those?
Yeah, that's my family. So I come from a Haku-speaking people. There are about 19 different languages in Bougainville, and Haku is one of the unwritten ones. And, yeah, it's basically essential to collaborate, I think, in my practice. And in ArtSpace, when you walk in, there's a lot of, like, there's, you turn right, I guess, if you come off the street, and you're met with Habitat, which is a four-screen, large cinema-type installation. It's got a lot of sound and a lot of visuals, information over history and time coming over you. And then you go to the other room, and it's an installation of sculptures made from natural materials that I've harvested from my land, my Haku land, with my clan members. And so, yeah, the installation reclamation is sort of comes from our traditional ideas of architecture. So we are people, we are place, we are reclaiming our history, reclaiming our land. These installations are made from natural materials, which all of our buildings, all of our, I guess you could say, spaces that we create are from palm, cane, traditional materials. So working with my relatives was important because I could learn about the traditional architectures, but also keeping those relationships solid in your work and contemporary art, but also talking about values that have been passed on and holding on to that was really important. And because of that relationship between that I have living in Australia and Bougainville, of course I'm going to work with my family, yeah.
And in reclamation, another thing I'm really interested in is that you've subverted the colonial the processes of mapping land. How is this represented in the work, in the exhibition?
Well, I'd like to, in a subtle way, I guess, counter that narrative. So when you walk in, I've scanned a huge map, and you walk in, it's like, you're confronted with this colonial map-making tool, I guess. It's a huge scan. I think it's quite a few metres high and 4 metres wide. And the idea is not that you can place yourself in relationship to here in Australia, to that place, because I've blown it up. The idea is that we don't map our land. Indigenous peoples, we know the land. This idea of a map where you draw lines and demarcate and name a people, it gave the West this idea that they could go in and claim it. You know, they hold that map as a weapon. Like, yeah. So to me, colonial map making is really quite damaging and aggressive and very patriarchal. Whereas Indigenous people, we live our knowledge of our land and we don't ever map that. We know the boundaries. We know it, you know, it extends to the ocean, it extends above the land, up to the trees, all around. And it also refers back in time and in the future. So when, it's hard to explain on radio, but like when you walk into the space, you see sculptures and they're protruding from tons of, I've completely gotten rid of the gallery floor by placing 17 tons of earth on top or soil. And this is like a, not a nice soil, it's like a uninhabitable soil, like that you see in the tailings, the topsoil. And so they sit in that and there's a terrain in this, in the whole gallery. And the sculptures have lines and markings inside them, which when I came up with the idea and concept, I came up with the initial idea and the feeling, but with my relatives, it takes about five hands to make one object. So we're both intuitively, or three or four of us at a time, we're making these sculptures. And inside there are lines, short sticks of cane, and then lashed together. And so these symbols mean a lot to us personally. And so one of them is a flying fox in flight. And so that's my totem. So by placing that in relationship to another work which has a less formal arrangement of lines is referring to our mapping, traditional mapping of ceremony. And then in the other works relate to song and the beat, the drum beat. So there's a diamond in there, and if you hit the middle of the diamond, that's a different beat to the outside of the diamond. So there's elements of music and song and dance that come into this whole installation. Yeah, so that the idea of, like, to come back to what you're talking about mapping, is that we map time and space as opposed to mapping land, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Just one last question. So the show's already been on open for a week or so. How have the responses been thus far?
Oh, it's been pretty great.
How did your family respond, considering their collaboration?
Yeah, really well. I think family, I have some family in Australia, and definitely the family back in Bougainville, it's like pretty big because we just voted for independence. From Papua New Guinea last November. So the timing is pretty great. And I think Wesley Enoch, you know, the Sydney Festival director, when he spoke, I was very mindful of calling it reclamation on Indigenous land here in Australia. And we spoke and he acknowledged that yeah, the idea that Australia really failed Bougainvillians and created this irreversible environmental damage through mining and war for resource extraction, but that is a reflection on Australia's poor relationship with their own Indigenous people. So it became really much about looking at our relationship here, current relationships between Australia, Australian Indigenous First Peoples, and Australia and their relationship in the Pacific as being still very colonial. Yeah.
Yeah, 250 years on from invasion. It's like still terrible, obviously. So,
yeah, totally.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Awesome. Thanks for the opportunity.
No problem. So Reclamation is showing as part of Sydney Festival at Artspace Sydney until February 23rd. The gallery is open Monday to Friday from 11 till 5 and weekends from 10 till 5, and entry is free. So head to our show page, TwistCR, search for So Hot Right Now if you want to listen back to that chat or get any more details. Right now I'm going to play a little bit more music. This is from Young Warriors. This is Black Deaths in Custody. You are tuned into So Hot Right Now.
Brothers and sisters,
what you know about Black deaths in custody?
What do you know about that? We better work it out this time in jail. What do you know about that?
Can anybody hear me?
We better work it out. What do you know about Black deaths in custody? Another black man in cuffs. What do you know about this crocodile's cuff? Who will rash young black fellas just to lock him up? What do you know about this bashing in the jail cells? Police power tripping while these brothers screaming how, getting tasered on the ground. What do you know about that? What do you know about this? A black fella in the back of a wagon. It's hot as hell and dehydrating as well. No water, no food. Imagine how his family felt when they heard the news. First we fight for our culture, fight for our rights and fight for our lives. Was it all a cycle? Nothing has changed. It's all about survival, that's what I say. Is this what we gotta go through every day? To all of those still grieving, I'm feeling your
pain. What you know about black deaths in custody?
What do you know about that? About black deaths dying in jail. Cops beating on a brother, leaving dying in a cell. We might as well like the fool man, cause they don't care. The sister one is gone and the well shit here. What's going down in this country cabals? Land and children getting stolen by the Wawa pal. We trying to hold on to what we got. I'm dreaming in a country in the land I grew up, but they're slowly killing that. Another blood from a black, pausing drips of a bat from a crooked ass jack. So take a look at the past and tell me what the fuck we should move on. It's too much pain in this land of wrong. Elders getting tased, brothers getting chased. Murder was the case, another passed away. I don't think this paper never ever stop.
What you know about black deaths in custody?
What do you know about that?
Miss the best new queer cinema from around the world at Queer Screen's 27th Mardi Gras Film Festival. With over 130 films, there's something for everyone. The program spans everything from The Glass Room, an epic love story of two women trapped by war, and Then We Danced, a powerful film about a young gay dancer defying the odds, to Bit, the transgender and lesbian vampire flick for lovers of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. These and more are showing from February 13 to 27. See the full program and grab tickets at queerscreen.org.au. To see our partners.
Yeah.
Black lives matter, that's the subject matter. Tell you to climb and they burn down your ladder. Sick of playing games like snakes and ladders. Matter of fact, I'm like Michael Jack, I'm better. Now this yearning got me learning like Charlie Perkins. Educated black man, tired of soul searching, tired of hurting, tired of working and not earning the same respect as my counterpart. My people in the deathbed by preventable heart disease. Served through rations brought from overseas on ships full of convicts and common thieves. Same ships the one that brought my mother's jeans. Same ships the one that got me wearing jeans. Same ships brought scholarships to university so I can be a doctor and fix my people. What's health when you're still not equal? The blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. The darker the skin, the quicker police shoot. Labeled as heroes that we all salute, but lest we forget our stolen youth. Our history is a mystery, but I know it word for word, yeah, it's clear to me. So what's the way forward? What's the way forward? They throw us straight in jail, yeah, no court cases on cases labeled as alcoholics and never racist. Grab some shoe polish and paint the blackest faces. Darker than the past, darker than our present, darker than the future that we're surely destined. Cause it's all good to call Mr. Goods an ape as long as you're 13 and have a white face. But I ain't happy, man, that shit is a disgrace. No game, no car to play, it's more than race.
Australians all, let us rejoice, for we are young and free. My people die young in this country, and yet we are 25%, a quarter of those Australians, locked up in our prisons. And if you are a juvenile, it is worse, it is 50%. An Indigenous child is more likely to be locked up in prison than they are to finish high school.
Should I be on my knees saying thank you? I be the statistic, I should be thankful. Right, wrong, I'm writing this song, cause this shit has gone on for too long. I'm not over it, nor will I ever be. I refuse to use your memory. I refuse to lose our identity. Our ancestors died defending me, defending the right to racism. It's time wasting. Open up your eyes wide, it's time to face it. Open up your hearts and it's time to embrace it. If you motherfuckers don't, I'm empty and loaded cases. AK-47 is not my choice of weapon. I'ma throw an invisible spear and really get you threatened. Throw my blackness in your face without a warning message. Enough with this shit, can we please just end it? Yeah. It's time to end it. Hey. Yeah. It's time to end it.
Hey. Sydney Outdoor Bed Cinema is back. Watch a movie under the stars from the comfort of a bed. Yes, that's right, a bed. The comfiest cinema experience, Movie in Bed, has landed on the rooftop of the Entertainment Quarter. Get food by Fratelli Fresh, El Camino or the Bavarian Beer Cafe delivered to your bed for the perfect night out this summer. Book your bed online at movieinbed.com. MOVINBED.com. 2SER sponsors.
Hello and welcome back to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture with myself, Nicole Beck. And it is nearly 10 to 12 on your Saturday morning, which means we have time for just one more story. So we are talking about group exhibition Hi-Viz, which supports the irresistible and spectacular nature of both dance and dress, using these art forms as a tool for empowerment and defense. A defense against violence, a defense against forgetting troubled histories, and a defense against not being seen at all. This exhibition at Casula Powerhouse Art Center brings together a wonderful range of artists who use fabulousness in their artworks as a form of subversion. Among those are featured artists Nicole Oliveira, who joins me this morning, as well as curator Luke Lectonori. Sorry, I should have cleared that one with you. What was your, how would I pronounce
Luke
that?
Luke.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining this morning. Sorry about that. To get started, Luke, could you maybe tell us a little bit about your inspiration behind the project?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I guess inspiration can be really easy because fashion and clothing is something you see every single day, and it's like your first moment of creativity, I think, sometimes, because getting dressed is a way of like shaping yourself for who you want to be that day. But I'm also interested a lot in around Casula, there's a lot of construction going on. So every day I drive through a series of yellow vested men and women stopping me, directing me, and they're in total control of that landscape. They control how I use it and move through it. And I just thought there was something interesting in that symbol of the vest, that yellow high visibility vest, is imbued with so much information and so much authority. And from there, I thought, how many other ways are there that our clothing signals information to the onlooker and and signals information and tells stories. So that's kind of where it all began, I think.
And what were you looking for in the artists that you selected for Hi-Viz in responding to that kind of stimulus?
I think I was looking for artists who know about the power of clothes and know how to wield it. And some of them subvert through clothing, and some of them sort of create clothing because the exhibition is a combination of local designers, dancers and visual artists who use clothing. So it's a real mix of different approaches to thinking about dress and using dress and wielding the information that can be translated through dress.
So, Nicole, do you know the power of clothing?
Well, I'd like to think I do as an emerging fashion designer, yeah.
So what are you presenting in Hi-Viz?
So I'll be presenting a few pieces from my graduate collection that I just finished at the end of last year, and my collection was very much inspired of about trying to understand like my personal cultural identity, being born here in Australia but having parents who are Filipino that have migrated here. So I wanted to really explore this in-between space in which I exist between like Filipino culture and also like the Australian landscape that I'm within. And so, yeah, I was just trying to really, yeah, try and understand that and how could I portray that with clothing and try and make visible all these internal questions about self onto the body. Yeah.
And I feel like kind of central to this exhibition is the idea of the spectacle or the kind of spectacular. Is that embodied or seen in your work at all?
For sure. I tried to use a lot of fabrications that almost oppose each other. So a lot of using like lots of beautiful lace, bridal lace, and then opposing that with like sportswear nylon or like wool suiting. And yeah, just trying to explore the tension between those two kind of opposing fabrications, and using that kind of spectacle of it just being a bit of a surprise. Yeah. So, yeah, and trying to use that as a vehicle of questioning all these different parts of my culture and my identity. Yeah.
And Luke, what can we expect from the other works and other artists represented here as well?
Yeah. So we've got, as I was mentioning, we've got dancers and we've got people who make outfits and clothing, and then people who can combine the two. So someone like Layla El-Rays, she makes a video, she's presenting a video which is her in a knife skirt. So she's performing a belly dance, and her dress is these chains with knives and blades slicing the air around herself, like them, like the artist's body themselves, but also you as the onlooker, the space is being cut up. And so there's that danger of getting close, but also there's the danger of being seen. So that idea of the spectacle is a double-edged sword, not to stretch that. And so Layla is an interesting case of combining dance and dress, but there's also Matthew Stegg, who's the designer of House of Helmati, which is this kind of underground queer designer who dresses a lot of performers. So if you go to like a queer nightclub or something, you will likely see a lot of like House of Helmati dressing the performers. But House of Helmati also has this more accessible, shoppable range of like shorts, which I'm wearing today happily, singlets, onesies that you as the audience member can also buy. So it's like through House of Helmati, you can see an entire queer scene, because it's like the audience and the performers side by side kind of are all wearing the same looks. But he's also an interesting person because there are a lot of politics that underpin the manufacturing of these clothes. So he makes outfits in a really broad range of sizes and shapes to sort of not subscribe to sort of a gender binary or a size binary or an age binary about who can and who cannot wear fashion. He also manufactures all of his clothes in Western Sydney, kind of supporting those people who were impacted by the change, like the relaxing of tariffs for internet, like for manufacturing. So all of these people who are making have had to kind of make out of their garages, often in Western Sydney. And so I like the idea of that, because if you see someone across the crowd, you know, be it on a street or on the nightclub, also wearing House of Helmati, you kind of know that you share more than just a brand of clothing. Like, you kind of share a politics. And that kind of like that signaling, that complex signaling is kind of that underpins a lot of the works. Because the other artists in the show include JD Reformer, who's producing a really brand new work specifically for the exhibition. There's also Joan Ross, Angela Tietia, and Clea Tipper is also has also been commissioned to make a new dance work. So Clea will be performing on the launch event on the 1st of February at about 3 p.m. So yeah, there's a lot going on, but there's it's really interesting to sort of see dance, a dance artist, a clothing maker, and then see them side by side and be able to apply the things you learn from one to the other. And it really just kind of opens everything up a lot more.
Yeah, I'm interested in the conversation, curatorially speaking, between having three quite diverse art forms kind of like in creating a dialogue in the one exhibition. What does that kind of create for you? Or what do you hope it creates for audiences?
I mean, I think for audience it'll create a show.
Yeah. Great.
Because I kind of like the idea of just being a showman. Like I want to be able to sort of work with artists who understand the power of looking and being looked at, but then also what to do with it. So with Layla, she's like they're cutting up the space around the body. They're cutting up the space that the audience is looking in, but they're also putting themselves in danger. They understand the danger and the potential violence in being a spectacle, but also knowing the power of captivating and knowing how to control the looker's look.
And something that's also really interesting about this work as well that kind of counters the spectacular nature is this idea of defence and protection. What kind of role do you think art kind of plays in protecting oneself? Maybe you could answer that, Nicole, or if that applies to your practice at all.
I think clothing is really, it's something that we put so close to our body. So at this, it's something that we protect ourselves with, not just with from, you know, weather conditions, but it also is protecting us from, from judgment sometimes. But I really look at fashion as a way of signaling who we are as people, not just to others, but also for ourselves, because when we put on our clothes in the morning, we look in the mirror and what we want to see is a true reflection of who we are. And I truly believe that about the power of clothes.
And Nicole, like there's an element of your work where it's like you're staking a claim, like you're kind of using stories like this character Maria Clara, who is this icon of femininity and beauty, and then you're applying like a more contemporary streetwear aesthetic to it to sort of stake your claim in that ideal of beauty as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to take, with this collection, I was trying to take agency over my own cultural narrative because, growing up in Australia, you kind of feel, I don't know, you ask a lot of questions about who you are. And I think this collection was a way for me to try and understand who I am and, claim that agency of my own cultural narrative and not be prescribed by other people around me. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so kind of entertainment and this idea of a show comes up a fair bit. What kind of role do you think entertainment can play in being a vehicle for social change or starting conversations about the kind of deeper things that are happening under the surface of this exhibition?
I mean, I think so much of what the artists are doing is just complicating things that you may be familiar with. Mm-hmm. So I think for an audience walking through Casula Powerhouse, seeing this exhibition, you already know a basic thing about clothing. You put clothes on every day. Mm-hmm. You walk in with an idea already set, and then the exhibition and through all the works, they're all just kind of complicating how people signal information through clothes or how clothes have a default authority, like the yellow high visibility vest by the construction worker who controls the landscape. I think entertainment is, in the exhibition, entertainment kind of functions to guide the hand a little bit. Like it helps you ease your way into some complex ideas because you come with a bit of information already, or you already kind of know how to read certain things.
Totally. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. Thank you both so much for joining us on the show this morning. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
So Hi-Viz is showing at Casula Powerhouse Arts Centre from February 1st to March 15th. The opening is taking place at the centre next Saturday from 2 to 4pm. And as Luke mentioned, there'll be a performance from Killer Tipper at 3pm. So be sure to get there. It's totally free to check that out. And we'll put all the details up on our show page. If there's anything that you've missed, also feel free to head there to find out about all the other things that we talked about on the show today. But right now, it's time for me to leave you. So until next week, here is a small bit of profession from Wicked Beat Sound System, and I will see you all next week.